You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
We are wrapping up our series in Ecclesiastes today, and we've covered quite a bit of ground in the last 5 weeks. And today we come to the concluding section of the book. Like most conclusions, there's not a lot of new information here, but rather a pulling together of key themes in a nice little package that we can take with us. David Gibson, in his book, Living Life Backwards, says, Ecclesiastes is a meditation on what it means to be alive in a world that God made and called good, but that has also gone so very wrong. Most of the book, as you've seen, is about what's gone wrong. But there is some hope along the way, and the concluding section of the book actually begins with a word of hope. Look at chapter 11, verse 7. This is the first verse of his concluding thoughts, and he says, it's so unlike him, light is sweet, and it is pleasant to see the sun. Light is sweet basically means life is good. Sweet evokes this imagery of tasting, savoring. It's the full enjoyment of life. Psalm 34 says, taste and see that the Lord is good. Psalm 119 says, how sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth. Honey's delicious, y'all. Honey is so good. I like honey in my oatmeal. I like honey on pizza. This week, I made guacamole and I put honey in it, and it was really good. I'd take a shot of honey right now if you had it. I never don't want honey. And he's saying, God's word is like that. God's goodness is like that. There's never a time which you don't want it. You will always take a shot of that. And he goes on to say, it's pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. It's simple. It's just good to be alive. Every morning that you wake up to see the sun, that is a good day to be alive. Psalm 108 says, I will sing and make melody with all my being. I will awaken the dawn. Why? Because I'm alive, and it's good to be alive. Light is sweet, and it's pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. If you trudge through the first 10 chapters of Ecclesiastes and you come to this verse, it's like the first warm day of spring. We learned a lot about the joy of spring in our 4 years in Omaha, Nebraska. Omaha is cold, and the first snow usually happens in like October. And by November, the snow is here to stay because the temperatures are never going to get above freezing again, ever, for eternity. And so for like 4 months, all of the snow that comes is there to stay. It just piles up. It doesn't go anywhere. There are like days and sometimes weeks where it feels like you don't see the sun. I remember one day in December, I went outside and it was a sunny day. And I thought, well, this is not so bad. And I got in my car and it was 0 degrees. And it was just because I had seen the sun. For a Texas kid, winter is disillusionment and despair. But eventually April comes. You say, wait, the first day of spring is in March. Nope, not in Omaha, it's not. It still snows in March. March is the hope of fools. April is for real. In April, the snow starts to go away. It's gone. Your neighbors are outside. In April, you begin to believe in God again. And the teacher has taken us on that kind of journey to this first day of spring. Now, he always knew we would end up here. He also knew, though, that we needed to face the harsh realities of winter to truly appreciate spring, to know what it means to be alive in a world that God has made and called good, but yet has gone so very wrong. And now that we're here, he gives us 3 words to live by, to take with us. If you look at chapter 11, verse 9, you see the first word. The verse begins with the word rejoice. Verse 10 begins with the word remove. Verse 11 begins with the word remember. Those are our words. We're going to look at them today. Each of these picks up a theme from the book, and together they kind of give us a way forward. So let's look at the first word, remember. Rejoice. I forgot the first word already. We'll start in verse 7. Light is sweet, and it's pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So, if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart, in the sight of your eyes, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. All right, so you've got two commands and two reminders. Rejoice in the days of your youth, but don't forget there's going to be some dark days too. Rejoice in your youth, but keep in mind there's going to be a judgment day. It's like he's saying, have fun, but not too much fun. And that's how a lot of people perceive Christianity. God is basically a killjoy, and Christians are those people that are against, like, everything. This is what my neighbors think. A number of years ago, we had a big party, and we invited literally about 50 people from our neighborhood came, and about 50 people from Providence came, and we just mixed them all up in our front yard and backyard and garage and house and all over. And it was just fun to watch. It was like a social experiment. Well, one of my neighbors came to me during the party, and he said, hey, what do you do anyway? I was like, oh, this is a conversation ender right here. I was like, well, I'm a pastor. He goes like, wait, what? So does that mean all these people go to your church? I was like, well, the ones that aren't from our neighborhood, yeah, they go to church. He's like, so they're Christians? Yeah, most of them, I think. And then he looked right at me and said, but they're interesting. If that's your impression of Christianity, I think this verse is going to surprise you. Because this verse is not about tempering our joy. It's about fueling it. Verse 8, if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. If you're alive, live. Enjoy your life. However long you have, enjoy every day you have. We know for a fact you're going to die. The teacher tells us that, but you're not dead yet. You're alive. So live. God gave you a life. Rejoice in it. Every day you have of it, rejoice. And then there's this reminder, but remember that the days of darkness will be many. So here's what he's saying. He wants us to enjoy life, to rejoice in every day that we have, but he doesn't want us to pretend like we live in a world where nothing's gone wrong, like there is no darkness. Some Christians live that way, and I'm telling you, it's a very shallow way to live. What makes Christian joy deep and wonderful is that it's a light that shines through the darkness. Verse 9, rejoice, young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. So he addresses a young man here. That's common for wisdom literature. And there are things here that I think have particular force for young men and young women. But there's also something here for all of us. And so let's look to see what he has to say. Craig Bartholomew, by the way, says the point here is not that he's just talking to young people. The point is to get the right foundations for living as early as possible in life. Okay, so if you're old and your youth has passed and you haven't gotten the right foundations for living, you still can. Start now. Get right with God. Pursue wisdom. Enjoy the life he's given you. If you're young, the teacher is trying to give you some wisdom here. Listen, let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. In other words, you're young. And when you're young, you have strength and energy and opportunity. You should enjoy that. That's simple, isn't it? But it's actually hard to do these days. Many of you grew up in a home, in a world, where you were told you can be whatever you want. And that's a lot of pressure, isn't it? Because if you can be whatever you want, then there's always this lingering question of like, should I be more than I am? And social media affirms this feeling that, yeah, your life could be better. Look at these pictures. And so what ends up happening is we spend the energy of our youth in comparison and envy, insecurity and doubt, always wondering if another place, another job, another friend group, another church would make things better somehow. That's no way to spend your youth. Get out there and live, he says. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. How do you do that? Next verse, or the rest of that verse. walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. This is language of desire. He's basically telling you, do what you want. Like, if you have a vision for life, pursue it. Do it. Don't just talk about the things that you want to do. Do them. Take some risks. You're young. Now, if you're young, you're like, yeah, all right, this Ecclesiastes guy gets me. And if you're older, especially if you're parents, you're getting a little concerned. You're like, did he just tell a room full of Austinites to do whatever they want? Doesn't he know? That's why insurance charge higher rates for these people. The short answer is, yeah, that's what it says. Enjoy your youth. Get out there and live. The longer answer is the rest of the verse, but know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. All right, so to the young and the old and all the rest of us that aren't sure which category we're in, this is what he says. Know this, for all these things, the way we live our life, the way we pursue joy, for all of this, God will bring us into judgment. I think there's two sides to this coin. The first one is what you might expect, which is, don't take this invitation to joy as a license for hedonistic pleasure. Not just because it's bad or wrong, but because it's not ultimately satisfying. We saw that in chapter 2. This is an invitation to true and lasting joy, which can only be found in God. Now, the other side of the coin is something we might not think of that often, and that is that God, notice, commands us to rejoice and be joyful. It's not just that this is permitted, it's commanded, and not just here, but like throughout the New Testament, we're commanded to rejoice and be joyful. And so when we stand before God in judgment, it won't just be about the bad things that we did. It will also be about whether or not we enjoyed the life that he gave us. Think about the first sin, Genesis 3. The story is that God commanded them not to eat of the tree in the middle of the garden, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. They did it anyway. And so they sought joy apart from God, and they were judged for it, right? That's the story we know. But underneath that, there's another story, which is that not only did they eat from the tree in the middle of the garden, they didn't enjoy all of the trees in the garden that God gave them to enjoy. They live in paradise. God said, you can have all of this. And so underneath the disobedience of eating from the tree in the middle of the garden is the disobedience of not enjoying literally all of the other trees in the garden. So many of the ways that we're pursuing life and joy apart from God are rooted in the fact that we haven't yet learned to enjoy the life God has given us. These verses are connected to a series of passages in the book that pick up on this theme. Let's just look really quickly at chapter 9. Chapter 9, verse 7, he says, go, eat your bread with joy, drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved of what you do. God has already approved of our enjoyment of his good gifts. We don't have to pray about it. There's no second guessing. We don't have to hesitate. Go, he says. Enjoy what God has given you. God is with you and he's for you. Get going. Eat your bread. Drink your wine. Don't spend your time looking around and being envious and jealous of other people's bread and wine, other people's lives. That's crazy. God gave you a life. Enjoy it. Go. A couple of verses later, in verse 9:10, he says, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. And so this isn't about finding the right job or the dream job. This is about the job you have and learning to enjoy the work that God has put on your plate today. I've had like over 20 jobs in my life, so many jobs. I got fired from a good number of them. And I worked at this Mexican restaurant and I couldn't stop eating the chips out of the drawer. One day he walked in and he was like, again? I was like, yeah. He goes, you have to stop. I said, I don't think I can. And he said, okay, you're fired. I mean, that was it, I left. I knew that I couldn't stop. All right, so I've done a lot of different things. And I will tell you, the most joyful workers that I've ever been around were not in the great jobs. The key to enjoying your work is not the paycheck that it provides. It's not the career path that it offers. It's just learning to put your might into it. That's what produces joy in work. Be where you are, he says. Love where you are. There's gonna be hell in it, sure, accept that. But fix your eyes on the good gifts that God has given you and enjoy them. Rejoice in all of them. Jesus told a parable once about a master who was going away, but before he went away, he gave to three of his servants various amounts of money to invest while he was gone. And so two of them did that. They went out and invested the money. But one of the third guy was like, you know what, I don't know. I hate to risk losing this thing that my master gave me. And so I know what I'm gonna do. I'm just gonna bury it. And then when he comes back, I'll just give it back to him. We'll be good, we'll be even. So the master goes away, he comes back. And the two that invested money and made a profit came to him and they gave him what they had. And this is what he says. Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I'm gonna set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. There's joy in putting your might into something and doing work for God, isn't there? When the third guy came and he gave the master back his money, the master was angry and cast him out. God has given you a life. Don't bury it. He's given you good gifts. Rejoice in all of them. Multiply your joys into the lives of others so that they too can see that the light is sweet. You'd think joy would be easy. Like show of hands. We all like joy. We all want joy. Show of hands. Joy is easy. Right? We struggle with it. Why is that? I think verse 10 gives us at least part of the answer. He says, if you want to rejoice, then there's gonna be some things in life that you need to remove. Look at verse 10. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body, for youth and the dawn of life are vanity. All right, two things here, heart and body. Let's start with the body. Put away pain from your body. When you're young, you feel invincible. I've got two boys, one's about to be 20, one's 15. They feel invincible. And they should, they're young. But the teacher's saying you will not always feel that way. Amen? The prime of life is fleeting. So two things. Take care of your body. You're going to need it someday. Trust me. Secondly, he's saying, don't treat your body as if it's disconnected from your soul. God has made you one human, intertwined, body and soul. He will redeem us, body and soul. This is why Paul says in 1 Corinthians 6, your body is a temple of the Holy Spirit within you, whom you have from God. That's a gift. You are not your own. You were bought with a price. So glorify God in your body. I think when he says put away pain from your body, it's both taking care of yourself, being healthy, but it is also not giving your body up unto sin. Things that aren't honoring to God. You won't find joy in that. The emphasis is stewarding your body while you're young. If you wait till you're old, it will be more difficult. And the same thing is true of issues of the heart. And so the first phrase is remove vexation from your heart. Vexation is not a word we use. It means annoyance, frustration, anger, anxiety. I think a good way to think about it would just be to think of it as emotional stress. So in chapter 1, he says there is vexation in wisdom because, gosh, the more you know, just the more sadness there is. In chapter 2, he says there's vexation in work. Like if you think your job is what's gonna make your life matter, then you'll never be able to put it down. You'll never stop thinking about it. And he says, even at night, that guy won't get any rest because it just owns him. In chapter 5, someone loses all of his money and he has nothing to pass on to his kids. And so he spends his days in vexation and sadness, he says. In chapter 7, vexation is in the heart of a person who's quick to anger. This person has not learned how to cope with life when it doesn't go his way. And all of these things, all of this emotional stress is what grows out of ingratitude and idolatry. And so the teacher is saying, you gotta remove these things from your heart. Again, the emphasis is on dealing with this stuff as early as possible. Don't let anger and frustration and irritation and anxiety linger in your heart. You probably know someone, probably your dad, that doesn't like to go to the doctor. Like, clearly something is wrong. You have a thing growing right there. Let's see if it's there next year. If it's there next year, I'll go get it checked out. Right? We all know somebody like that. I asked a doctor friend of mine yesterday for stories like this. I was like, hey, do you have any stories of people who, if they would have gotten something treated early, it would have been no big deal. But now that they haven't dealt with it, it's like a huge deal. Now, he's worked in ER and all kinds of places. He was like, yeah, well, I have stories, crazy stories, stories I can't even share here. I was like, do you have anything more common, more like church appropriate? He was like, yeah, you know, people lose feet every day in the hospitals. I was like, well, that is quite a statement. What do you mean? And, you know, there are diseases like diabetes that cause these kinds of problems. What happens is they do damage to, I'm going to talk like I know what I'm talking about here, but he told me they do damage to blood vessels and to, I don't know what I'm talking about, to nerves. And so over time, people lose sensation in their feet. And so there could be like damage happening to their feet and they wouldn't know it. And they might just keep walking on them, keep going on like, no, there's no problem, but they are doing irreparable damage because there's also no circulation in their feet. And so the body won't heal like it's supposed to. And he says, this happens all the time. People just don't pay attention. And then when I see them, like, I've got to chop the feet off. We do the same thing with emotional stress. Look, nobody becomes a cynical or fearful or angry person all of a sudden. It happens over time. At first, they just ignore the issues, push away the feedback. And over time, they become numb to it. And they just keep going on with life like nothing's wrong. But all the while, over time, they are doing such damage to their soul. And so let me ask you a few diagnostic questions. These won't all land on you, but maybe one of them will, and this would be a good chance for you to say, I should probably check this out. Here's some questions. Do you feel your heart growing cynical? Like you can see through everyone. No one's genuine or sincere. Are you avoiding a conversation that needs to be had? Are you hiding your sin from others primarily because you feel ashamed? Like, man, if they knew that, I would be so rejected. Are you coping with stress in unhealthy or addictive ways? Do you think, and are you increasingly thinking that everyone is always against you? Do you feel distant from God, but you keep going through the motions because, you know, well, I'm part of the church? These things feel manageable right now, but I'm telling you, if you don't pay attention to them, if you don't deal with them as early as possible, they're gonna cause way more damage in your life than you imagine. My doctor friend said, diabetics need to check their feet every day. And I thought, man, that is a really good mindset for how we should approach sin and emotional stress. We need to be on the alert every day, checking our heart before things get out of hand. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body. Your joy depends on it. Third thing, rejoice, remove, remember. Chapter 12, verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. We're not gonna have time to go any further than this. Verses 2 through 6 are just images of death, and the day of the Lord and judgment, but the point is you're alive now, so live your life now. And the foundation of enjoying the life we have is remembering that God gave it to us. He's our creator. This is more than just acknowledging that God is there. It's letting the reality of God shape how we view the world and how we live our lives. It's very similar to the fear of the Lord concept we talked about a couple weeks ago. And this whole thing picks up on a few themes from the book. And so I'm just going to, by way of revisiting them, roll through them really quickly. This won't take that long. But here are some things that we've talked about that would help us remember the Creator. This is what it means. First, it means to embrace our limits. We're creatures. We're not the Creator. We don't know and cannot know a lot of things. We can't fix a lot of things. We can't control the future, no matter how hard we try. But God does. He's the creator. And so remembering our creator is turning our hearts to him, trusting in his providence, that he's at work in ways that we can't see, and that all of his works are good. And so are you embracing your limits? Which is to say, are you trying to do too much? Are you trying to be too much? Are you trying to know everything? You're trying to control things you can't, trying to be somebody you're not. Look, you're not a superhero. You have limits. Embrace them. You can find real joy there. The second thing it means is to listen to God. In chapter 5, you remember the teacher took us to church, and he's like, look, I know. There's a lot of problems in church, but you should still go. And he says, when you go, you should go to listen more than to talk, because you know, God is in heaven and you're on earth. So, you know, let your words be few as possible. Are you listening to God? Not just in private, but in community, in corporate worship. Or are you making decisions in isolation, leaning into your own wisdom? Remembering our creator is to say, I need to listen to him and to his wisdom in the collected community. There is particular wisdom here, I think, for the young, because you're making decisions right now that have like a big trajectory in life. Some of you are choosing, you know, majors and careers, and spouses. Some of you are figuring out for the first time what to do with money and time and friends and church. All of this stuff has massive implications. All of those choices are going to play out over the next 10 to 50 years. And of course, there will be grace along the way. God will work even through our mistakes for good. Of course he will. I'm just saying, why would you wait till then to seek him? He can be found now. He can give you wisdom on the front end. And so seek him while he can be found. And then remember, all of these things, because God's your creator, all of these things, the things that you think are yours, your body, your time, your friends, your money, your spouse, your kids, all of that belongs to him. And so steward it well unto him. Last thing is, remembering God means obeying his commands. So at the end of the book, chapter 12, the author of the book gives us his conclusion, and this is what he says. The end of the matter, all has been heard. This is what's up. That's my translation. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Remembering in the Old Testament is always connected to action. There is an implied action when it comes to remembering. And mainly our action is to submit to trust, and to live for God. The person who hears God's commands and is like, that's great, but doesn't do them, he's a fool. He's like a person who builds his house on the sand. It looks pretty good for now, but it's gonna have a great fall. The person who hears God's commands and does them, that's a wise person, like someone who builds his house on a rock. The storms are gonna come, but he will rejoice and live. Are you submitted to God? Not in the way that like, okay, yeah, I mean, they're kind of a burden, but I'll do them if I have to. Not like that, but happily, because you know that his commands are the way of joy and life in this world. This book is about how to truly live. Rejoice in every day and in every gift God has given you. Remove vexation from your heart. Remember your Creator. And as we come to the communion meal, I think it's interesting that the meal engages us at all three levels. It reminds us that Jesus came to this world eating and drinking, enjoying himself. It was actually a sign that the kingdom of God had come to earth. And it's a sign for us of the day when he will come again and we will feast with him, have unending joy in his presence. It reminds us that Jesus came to remove vexation from our hearts. The meal is provision, food and drink. And that's what an anxious person needs, is provision. Jesus said, don't be anxious about your life. Your Father in heaven knows what you need. He'll give it to you. He'll provide. And the meal reminds us of that. The meal reminds us that the Creator entered into creation. Jesus embraced the limits of flesh. Jesus only did what he heard the Father telling him to do. And he did everything the Father told him to do. Paul says he became obedient even to the point of death on a cross. Jesus' death on the cross was the most unexplainable thing anybody had ever seen. It made no sense. It was the most tragic injustice they could even imagine. But God was at work in it in ways that they couldn't see, predict. God was at work in the life and the death of Jesus to bring resurrection, light, and life to the world. And when we take this meal, we rejoice in the life that he's given us and we remember what he did to purchase it for us. Let's give thanks.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.